You know, I want to thank all of you for coming here today, and thank Scott for putting this together. When I looked at the title, Strategies and Tactics to Sustain Effective Resistance for the Long Haul, I must say that I went right to sustain effective resistance. I kind of ignored the strategy and tactics part of it, but it is all together. So I will try and say a few words about strategy and tactics as well. I'm trying not to repeat what Leslie and Arun said. I agreed with a great deal of what they said, but let me try and cover a few bases here. One is that, to begin with, I actually think that while it's true we and this country have seen some terrible times in our history, I think this is a particularly terrible time, even more so than certainly other times in my lifetime, which is now getting longer and longer. I say that for a number of reasons. Not just to, further depress or confuse us all, but because I think we do need to be grounded in the reality of the moments that we live in and the history that we are part of. But in terms of why I think this is one of, if not the worst time I know personally, is that three things in particular I want to call attention to, above and beyond just the hardcore right-wing agenda that has taken hold of really almost every level of government in many parts of the country. I mean, I think the New York experience, and for all the problems, and there are many with the local government, it is different than many other local governments around the country, particularly at the state level. So there's that hardcore right-wing agenda that Trump and his, gang of evil people, are pushing hard it's not just rhetoric. I mean, take a look at the budget proposal. I mean, that is talking about an impact on people's lives. The budget, means something in the daily lives of people. But there are three other things to mention. One is that the consolidation, not just of electoral power, but also economic and cultural power that the right wing has for decades now been moving toward that, but it is at a higher degree of consolidation, and particularly the economic power. It is simply true that fewer and fewer people control more and more of the economy, not only here, but on a global scale. Two is, speaking of the global scale, is the expressions, and in some cases, the rise to power of the right wing internationally. That is also kind of frightening. And then third, I would just mention, is what has been unleashed on the streets of our cities, largely through the Trump campaign, but for other reasons too, the kind of violence and hatred and bullying. Most dramatically, what we saw in Portland just a week ago or so, with two people being killed and another one, quite seriously wounded. But that was what came after a bullying attack, an assault on two young women because they're Muslim. So, and that part of it, the violence, the hatred, the bullying, if I don't like you, I'm going to beat you up kind of attitude, I think is particularly dangerous and particularly hard to rein in. Once it has been unleashed and in the context where the head of the country, the highest elected official of the country, actually reinforces it almost every single day, it is very hard to put that back in the bottle. So I want to just highlight that or call attention to that as well. We, and by we I mean the left, broadly speaking, and we can have, you know, endless panels about what is the left and who is the left and et cetera, but give me that, right, the left. We were not prepared. We were not prepared for either a Trump victory. Well, nobody was prepared for that. Nobody saw that coming. But we were not prepared. We did not have a clue about what to do about it. And we were not prepared for the incredible response to Trump in terms of the outpouring of activism that both Arun and Leslie you have already spoken to. And I'm sorry to say that we're still not prepared for it. I must say it does feel like when Scott said it's been 120 days or so, I thought, really? It feels, you know, more like a lifetime since inauguration. But however long it's been, we have not yet been able to figure out, and I understand these things take time, but unfortunately, I think the clock is working against us at this moment. But we, the left, have not been able to figure out how to both simultaneously confront the Trump agenda, and not just confront it, but resist it, and also at the same time nurture what a new kind of movement needs to be. Right, what do we need? And I don't even know that we have the answers. I know I don't have the answers. I don't pretend to have the answers about what that new movement needs to be. But clearly, from my vantage point, clearly we need something new and different in this country. I don't say that to ignore or dismiss a lot of tremendously good work that people and movements have done over the years. Partially, I guess, because I was part of some of that work, but set that aside, right, that there has been a lot of tremendously powerful, important work done in a variety of movements. So I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? I want to figure out how do we learn the lessons that we take from those movements, but then move into some kind of new way of dealing with both resisting and projecting our vision and our demands of what a future must look like. And again, I don't pretend to have the answers on that. Part of that is thinking about sustainability, our own sustainability. And of course, I do a lot of work on the climate movement these days, so I'm also concerned about just the sustainability of the planet, which is, you know, at risk. And it's pretty scary. And I don't mean to be an alarmist, but I think we do need to take this climate crisis quite seriously. Anyway, how do we sustain our movements? And there has to be, there always is, a dynamic between building organizations and building movements. They are different, and yet I think we need to be engaged in doing both. And we need to do that work in a way that doesn't pit them against each other, but rather each piece of that work reinforces the other piece of it. You know, all too often in the many movements I've been involved in, and I see it again in the climate movement now, where organizations too many times kind of put their own organizational agendas and needs ahead of what is best for building a movement, not understanding that when movements get stronger, often it means that organizations are going to get stronger as well. They don't have to be in conflict with each other. So again, I wish I had a formula. Here's how we do it. We do this piece of movement building and this piece of organization building. It all fits together nicely. I don't have that. But I do know that we need to do that. And at least three pieces are critical in that work. One is reminding ourselves, even those of us, and I see a lot of people in this room with gray hair, even those of us who've been doing this for a long time, that it's not the changes we want, the changes we work for, are not going to happen overnight. They don't happen overnight. And by overnight, I mean a decade. This is a long, long process. Two is that we have got to do a lot better with having the not just the voices, but the leadership of young people in all of our movements. And maybe I think that more and more as I get older and older, but it is there's a lot of reasons for that. And then the third thing to just say here in terms of sustainability is to not shut the door on new movements, new ideas, new creative approaches. And I know full well that it's hard. It's hard to build on the work you've been doing and think you've been making a contribution. In fact, you have, and your movements and your organizations have. And yet at the same time, here comes a whole new idea, a whole new set of issues. How do you stay open? How do you stay true to your own work, your own history, building on that, and have enough openness to the new movements, the new ideas, and the new tactics that people bring to that work? Two is on the question of effective. That was all about being sustainable. On the question of being effective, well, like so much else, being effective is in the eyes of the beholder. One person's effectiveness is another person's, you know, waste of time. But I think part of being effective means that we have to not only challenge power, but when and where we can, we have to contest for power. And that's not only in the electoral arena, right? In other arenas of life, we need to try and be in positions where we, again, the left, broadly speaking, are actually have some power and some control and can set an agenda. That's, to me, what begins to be effective. But I think there are at least several other measures of effectiveness. One is that we are engaging in activities that are bringing new people in, that are welcoming to new people. I think that's critically important. And that we're also, another measure, is that we are able to articulate alternatives to the situation as we now see it. I think effective at this moment in our history does require, again, a balance. A lot of what we do is about balancing things, but it does require balance between taking aim at, if you will, the horrendous picture of what's developing out of Washington and on the federal level, balancing that against our local work. That the local work always, in my mind anyway, always the community building, the base building, however you want to call it, the grassroots work, the local work always has to be the foundation for any effective movement. So how are we building that? How are we sustaining that? How are we making sure that it's open to new people and continuing to grow without dropping our I think, critically important work of saying no to what's going on the national level? And then the third word there was resistance. Yes, yes, we have to resist. And there are a lot of ways to do that. But as Arun and I think Leslie also said, we also need to be about projecting our vision, right? It's not enough to just say no to what the bad guys are doing, right? Which has to happen. We have to keep saying no. We also have to project our vision. So for instance, on healthcare, it's really not good enough to just say that the new plan by the Republicans would throw 23 or 24 million people off of healthcare. Well, that's maybe true, but actually, wouldn't you throw them off of healthcare? It would deny them healthcare insurance, and insurance is a critical word there. I think probably most of us in this room and at this conference would rather have a single-payer system and where we wouldn't need insurance, right? Obamacare might have been a step forward, but that was far from good enough. That was far, I believe, for most of us, far from what we actually envision, a healthcare system that's based on meeting people's needs and not a profit would look like. So we have to, in the resistance, be projecting something beyond. It's not that we just want to go back to Obamacare. That's just not enough. You know, in the old days, in the 60s or so, we talked a lot about liberation. I don't hear that word too much these days, and I think we need to resurrect that. We need to, that has to be part of our vision here. In terms of, just a quick word or two about strategy and tactics. One is we have to keep reminding ourselves there is a difference, right? They are different. Strategy and tactics are different things. I don't believe we, the left, has a strategy. I think that unless we, until we have a clearer vision of where we're trying to get to, it's hard to articulate a road to get to that. We have bits and pieces, and we have strategies for this issue or that community, but collectively as a whole, I don't think we have a strategy yet. I think we could develop one. I don't think it's out of our reach. I think that in terms of tactics, as far as I'm concerned, almost everything is available for us. Almost everything is in our toolbox. The question is, what's effective, what's meaningful, what's useful at any given moment, and how do we use different tactics in ways to help build the movement and complement one another? I think actually our movements have come a long way from the period where tactics were kind of pitted against each other. You know, no, you're only serious about change if you do X, Y, or Z. I don't hear that so much anymore. But we still haven't gotten to a place where we have an integrated use of various tactics so that they build on one another and give strength to a movement. Just a few other quick things to, and then I'll wrap this up. I have a whole lot more on my mind, but I'll just wrap this up. On this question of unity and the Grant Coalition, et cetera, in my heart of hearts, I would love that. I think that'd be great. As I've gotten older and done more and more of this work, I've come to experience, not just think about, but experience how difficult that is. And maybe it's really not the most important thing at this point anyway in human history. I do think, as Leslie was saying, that the coordination and solidarity and alliance building work that is underway is critically important. And I don't know, maybe it will lead at some point to a grand coalition. But insisting that that's where we're headed is not going to work. It just simply isn't going to work. Even if we would like it to happen, it's not how people in this country are organizing themselves. So if we can kind of pull back a little bit on that being the goal, right, and instead focus on what are we doing now that is, in fact, acts of solidarity with each other's movements. How are we opening doors to work together? How are we not just, solidarity doesn't just mean, we're doing this, will your group come to our activity? Right? That's not how it works. How do we really engage in solidarity based on a deeper understanding of how our issues, our struggles, our communities actually really are connected? And that goes to the deep thinking question. We need more deep thinking. We need more people doing it. Finally, let me just say on the elections that are coming up, because I do think that electoral work, as I said before, is an arena that we do need to contest in. Now, who the we is and how we do that work is going to vary tremendously. I would hope that there are more and more people who run for office as independents, you know, not as Democrats. But in some instances, there are some Democrats running and, you know, that it makes sense to support them, both because of who they are and because of the general climate in that city or state or whatever. So I think that we do need to relate to the elections that are coming up in 2018, in particular the congressional races. And even here in New York City, I think we need to figure out a way to relate to the 2017 citywide elections and city council races. Not that we necessarily should run somebody for the mayor's office or support a given candidate, but how do we use the electoral cycle as a vehicle for highlighting and deepening the work on the issues that are so important to us? I see now in terms of the climate work, you know, the mayor has a lot of good rhetoric on the climate, but there's so much, for instance, here in New York City, that New York City government could be doing to cut carbon emissions, for instance, to move to renewable energy sources that isn't being done yet. Well, now during the election year, isn't this time to to harvest from them, from people running for office, clear commitments, right? Now's the time to do it once they get elected. You know, who knows what they're going to end up doing. It's now they're most vulnerable, if you will, to the power of movements. So how do we use election cycles and the dynamics around elections to highlight, to push, to struggle around the issues that are most important to us? That's one way I think we have to engage in electoral work. And then finally, on the role of mass protests, some people have said, although I've heard this many times over the years, oh, the period of mass marches is over, they don't do anything, blah, 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 blah. I don't agree with that. I think that, as I said before, there are many tools in our toolbox. There are many tactics. I've never seen a march lead immediately to a change in policy. And yet I've never seen a movement actually have an impact on policy without including some mass protests, including mass marches and rallies. So it's not that it's an end in itself. It's not that it's the most important tool or tactic, but I think it is a valuable tool, especially in a period like this. And one of the reasons I say that is that it affords an opportunity for all those people who haven't been involved yet, that often their entrance ramp, if you will, into a movement is to come to a mass march, to get excited, to see people who they've never met before, to be on the streets, to get energized, to go home, to keep doing the work. The challenge then is how to use those mass moments to make it possible for people to stay engaged. And that goes back to the sustaining of our movement. I wish I had a formula for how to do that. It seems to me this is one of the most critical things we need to do. Whatever the issue is that we're working on, however we're trying to link our issues and our communities and our movements, whatever all the tactics are that we use, at the end of the day, the question is, are we going to do our work in a way so that in a year from now or 2 years from now or wherever down the road, we could say what we did now helped not only sustain, but deepen and strengthen the movement that we're trying to build. Again, I wish I had the answers to these questions, but these are some of the thoughts on my mind today.